The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance online at supervalue.ie.
The abuses and the trauma experienced by many women in the Magdalen laundries and mother and baby homes have been widely reported over the last few years. Well, Joe Spain's debut novel, it's called With Our Blessing, tells the story of a modern day murder case which is linked to these past atrocities. Joe, thanks a million for dropping into us on the programme this morning. First of all, where did you get the idea for the novel?
I never know how to answer this question because I'm like, my head is just full of plots and I keep meeting people and thinking, is your head not full of plots
it's
as well?
It's coming from in here. It's not coming from headlines. I mean, yeah, the actual...
I've always been aware of Magdalen laundries and mother and baby homes because my dad was adopted. So it was in the background of my head when I came up with the plot. But then when I was researching the book, I actually researched family history as well. So it was a fascinating process because I was writing this crime novel, which is fictional, and then finding out stuff about my own family at the same time. And it was fascinating.
So do you think that, you know, people who were adopted during this time, they didn't realise that their mothers had been through what they had been through? And was your dad upset about the whole adoption thing in terms of his own life?
He was. My dad passed away in the 90s. And he never, I suppose he just always had this feeling of being abandoned because people didn't know that so many women had been forced through the mother and baby homes and put in situations where they had to give up their children. So he passed away in 1995 and didn't know that. And I found out later on that he'd been through St. Pat's in the Navan Road.
Well then, like, did your family's own connection, do you think it made it difficult to research the book or make it a fascinating journey of history to research the book?
Oh, it was absolutely fascinating. It was all happening at the same time that everything was happening in the state as well, in terms of the Magdalen women looking for an apology and an investigation starting into the mother and baby homes. So it was very topical. I wasn't just off on some side issue. So there was lots of material out there for me to be reading. And I did ring up the HSE and I experienced that kind of wall that adopted people talk about all the time. But I was lucky enough because I was a grandchild and my dad's passed away and presumably his mother might be passed away as well. So I got some information.
Well, sorry to make a joke about it, but I'm hoping that the economic recession has passed away as well, because I don't know if it has, but you keep hearing about these green shoots. I'd like to see a few of them. Anyway, let's go back to the economic recession, 2010, Irish detective, Dublin-based. Take it from there. What is it about?
Yeah. Well, they find a body in the Phoenix Park, so it's all set in Ireland, which was a challenge in itself, because I know... from when I watch Irish films or read Irish books, and they don't do everything geographically to plan. You know, the thing in the Snapper where they're driving over the Liffey the wrong way to go to the Rotunda from Kilbarrick.
Everybody. It's a one-way traffic.
They go in the wrong door. So I was setting this book in Ireland, and they find a body in the Phoenix Park, and it transpires they track this woman's history down to this notorious former Magdalen laundry in Limerick. And my Dublin detective team head down there to investigate her past, and that's where it transpires. It was a Magdalen laundry in a mother and baby home. And I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but it kind of explores the experiences of the women who went through that home, and it's all linked to.
And can I just say then, have you got a second book under your belt, do you?
It's done.
Done. Okay. Yeah. Now, this one here is an Irish detective. It's not the same character. You're not going.
It is.
Oh, one of those. Yeah. Hey? All right. You're looking towards the box set, yeah?
I'm going for Agatha Christie type levels of numbers,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. There has been so much written and broadcast, obviously, about the laundries. Starting the research or just going about it, what did you actually do? Where'd you go? Did you talk to the people?
I didn't, because it's crime fiction, so it's set against a backdrop, but I did want to treat the issue very sensibly because it is a sensitive issue and you can't just take it loosely. I started with the Justice for Magdalen's website, which is a wealth of information. And then there was documentaries like Steve Humphrey's Sex, Nicole, Climate and Channel 4. And then, of course, I read Martin Sixsmith's book, Philomena, and watched the movie, and I talked to Martin subsequent, and he's given this book.
He has, indeed. Is it important to get a Martin Sixsmith endorsement, if you like? He says on the back of the book, explores the dark secrets from Ireland's past that continue to haunt society today. I mean, he is a name that's out there that's known for all this, for not just the article that he wrote, but the Philomena movie.
Yeah. And he's such a gentleman to deal with as well. And I was nervous about asking him because it is a fictional book. And he's very much known for dealing with the realities of Magdalen laundries. But he felt I treated it very sensitively. And I suppose it's not that any one person owns the Magdalen Laundry. I think if you speak to most Irish families, somebody has a relative who's been through a laundry or through a mother.
Well, this is
home.
The point. I mean, if you're looking at the Justice for Magdalen site or whatever, and the survivors, I presume, and members of, you know, all sorts of long-time activists in human rights, adoption reform, academics, researchers, it's all there.
Yeah.
And everybody's there. If that's the case, when you were looking at this all the time, were you thinking of your dad all the time?
Yeah, I really was. Mm. And it's so hard that he's not here to see the book and to read it. I think he would have really enjoyed it. But it would have been nice for him to know that story, because when I did research his past, his mother had actually refused to give him up, which was virtually unheard of in the 1950s. And she kept him for 4 years. And when she did bring him back to the orphanage, and this lady in the HSE was saying to me, she was more than likely destitute and alone and not able to actually keep him.
Yeah.
So it's a very sad story. And I know as well, I've 4 children and I'm looking at them and my 4-year-old and thinking, imagine telling that 4-year-old somebody else was mammy and daddy. You know, even though he got good parents, it's a really tragic story. And his is not the only one.
What age are your kids? Or what's the oldest?
I have 10,
hold on
six.
A second, 10, 6, and you're going backwards. So you've got 4 kids under 10.
Yeah.
where did you find the time to write the book?
Oh, it's like any working parent, isn't it? Like somebody said to me recently, actually, if you want something done, ask a busy person, or a busy parent, more importantly. And my husband's at home with the 4 kids as well, so he's kind of the wind beneath my wings. He'd be laughing when he hears that.
we're not going to play it. We're not going to play it. Listen, I'll tell you, just as a matter of interest, like, you know, okay, you have 4 kids and that. When this book arrived, a hardback thing arrives in the post and it's sitting there in front of you on the table, was that like another kid? It was like, my God, there it is.
It was. I was tweeting on Facebook and I was saying, like, this is the happiest day ever since getting married and having 4 kids.
Yeah, like, yeah, you've got to watch that bit. Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel real. Even when you see the book and you see your name on it, in my head, it's still a Word document that I was working on for a year.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm signing the book for people now and I feel like a fraud. It's like it's somebody else's
book. Well,
you
knock down a lot. I mean, like, you have With Our Blessing, Joe Spain, you send it in and then they send it back and there's like all redacted bits and bits crossed out and all. Look at her shaking her head saying, no, it was perfect when I sent it in first time.
It was. My husband is a former editor. And obviously I was shortlisted in that Richard and Judy competition. So they gave us 4 months to kind of perfect the book we were sending
in. I want to talk about the Richard and Judy. What, you heard about this and you said, that's to hell with it, I might as well give it a bash, along with another 49,999 books or whatever, which it was, wasn't it? About 50,000 books or something. You got shortlisted to what?
There were 7 of us. Yeah, it was a shock because I'd written the book and I'd kind of, at the same time, Joan O'Ryan had done The Spin and Heart and he was on The Late Late Show talking about his 57 rejection slips.
Right.
And I was thinking, so I'm going to have to get 57, maybe more, before this book is published. It's one of those moments. I saw the competition advertised. It was free to enter. And I just said, well, I bang in the first few chapters and forgot all about it and then got the thing saying it was shortlisted to 7. And then on the day they sent me the email, my latest baby was 10 days old and the email started with, well, you haven't won the competition. But the next line was, but we really like the book, so we want to take it forward. And then they gave me a 2-book deal. So I hadn't even sent it to a publisher's at
Fantastic.
That stage. So that was
so
kind
they
of
did all the dirty work for you, just a chance entering
a
competition.
Just a chance.
That's fantastic. You've had it all too easy, for God's sake. Okay, so, and the winner was the historical romance book, wasn't it? Which is huge. You can't beat the historical romance.
Yeah, I read the book and it was really good. But it was apples and oranges. You know, it's difficult to judge. And they didn't have a genre. They wanted any book. So they had 7 different books, probably 7 different categories. But the publishers who took my book on, they published Scare with a Dragon Tattoo. So they're obviously big into crime.
Right. Very good. Yeah, very good. Now, I presume there is some sort of pressure on you to get it right. I mean, regardless of how much you do and regardless of how much fiction there is in terms of the murder and your Dublin detective and all the rest of it, you know, you do owe something to the people involved in terms of the background of what the story is. So do you think there was pressure to ensure that the time and history that you're talking about was portrayed correctly in the novel? A responsibility?
Yeah, I'm a pains in the author's note in the start of the book to say that this is fiction and everybody in it is fictional and the religious order is fictional, but that the examples of some of the stories used are drawn from real life testimonies of women who went through these institutions and then fictionalised. Because, you know, ultimately, like, it is crime fiction and that has to be stressed, but the women went through such awful, awful things, and I think they feel very vindicated now because they've had an apology from the Taoiseach. But there's probably
writing the book around the time of the apology, so it was all in the news.
Yeah, it was all very topical at the time. But I guess you couldn't tell the story enough of what happened to them. And people said, and it should be told internationally. And it wasn't just an Irish phenomenon, Magdalen Laundries.
Yeah.
And it's not just a modern thing either. Like, women have always been stigmatised and always been treated in particular ways, particularly single women who are pregnant. And it's probably still a stigma to an extent. So you just can't tell the story enough. And I tried to do it as
so
well
you
as I could.
Knew that doing your research it was going to be bad, but you were absolutely horrified, I presume, by the end of it, were you?
Yeah, I really was, because I'm, you know, a modern woman with four children, and you just think, if this was the 40s or the 50s, how would I have, you know, and I had my first baby before we got married.
Right.
And that's in your head, you know, if this was 60 years ago, what would have happened to me?
So. Yeah. Just to go back to who you are, Joe, because this is an interesting one. I mean, like, you know, you were a journalist or a freelance journalist in college, and then you started working in Leinster House as a political advisor.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I'm still doing that, actually.
Oh, really? Oh,
God. Yeah, yeah.
What were you doing? Looking after finance bills or something? Or?
Yeah, I work with Piers Doherty.
Right.
And I'm doing wider policy at the moment, but for the last few years, yeah, I was doing finance bills and speeches and covering the budget. And
like, you were writing you were writing out his speeches, were you?
Oh, well, he more or less writes them himself, but you know, you work with them and guide them.
Just like, I mean, kids today, eh? They don't really read as much as they used to. They're all hunched over their little mobile phones or their some kind of tablets or whatever. When did you start reading?
I started reading when I was about 4 or 5. There were no tablets. I'm in mid-30s now.
Yeah.
And I still can't buy a Kindle because I still like books.
And were you Enid Blyton or Agatha Christie by the age of 10 or 11 or whatever?
I was Agatha Christie by the time I was 9.
Oh, you had dropped the Enid Blyton by 6,
Enid Blyton
you?
Was a nice little crime starter. Right. And that was too simple. I was figuring them out.
What? You don't like the 5 find outers and dog?
I love them.
Fantastic. Oh, no, the best ones were the of adventure, you know, the castle of adventure, the island of adventure.
Yes,
they were easily the best ones.
I love them.
Fantastic.
I had a teacher in primary school, actually. I invited him to the launch recently, Martin Stein's. And when I was in 5th class, he put me in the corner reading Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Because by the time I'd got to him, he realised that this girl just reads nonstop. And I'm from a very working class background, and he used to just give me masses of support and books. And it kind of influences you then, you know.
Yeah, but you had the good luck along the way too, and fair play to the Richard and Judy thing, obviously. Do you have a system when you're writing? I mean, or do you have it's now 12 o'clock at night, I'm doing this till 3 in the morning?
On that book there, I was writing it as I was writing it, and I came in from work every night. I'd do the kids, bed and bath, and then my husband is a sports fanatic. He'd watch telly nonstop, so I'd sit down and just write every night and every weekend. The second book, I did the outline first, so I was able to do that in 4 weeks because it was so much more. I was on maternity leave and I had the time anyway. But I've done the plot outline for the third book now as well. And I just, while I'm working full time, I just have to do nights and weekends.
Wow. As you say, give it to a busy person. Joe Spain, it is, With Our Blessing, is the name of the book. And it's released tomorrow and the launch at Easton's in Stephen's Green in Dublin. And you'll be doing book signings around Dublin again. And then it's going to be released in Britain and Germany as well.
Yeah.
And number 2 on the way. Fantastic. Well done. Okay, Joe, thanks a million for dropping in.